Welcome to Jaws of Justice Radio on 90.1 FM KKFI Kansas City Community Radio. It's Monday morning. My name is Teresa Wilkie. Jaws of Justice Radio is proud to kick off the presentations of Women's Equality Week with guest host Alice Kitchen and her guest, Jane McQueenie of the Kansas City Human Rights Commission. They're going to talk about how employment discrimination impacts women in our community. In the second half of the broadcast, Latara Smith will talk with Doug McKean, Operations and Logistics Manager, about Sleepy Head Bed's mission to make sure every child in Kansas City has a bed to sleep in and how you can donate and show your support for their efforts. Stay tuned for our calendar of events in the middle of the broadcast and the 420 drug war news at the end of the broadcast. Coming up is Alice.
I'm Alice Kitchen, co-chair of the Women's Equality Coalition, and we are ready to go with our week of 7 days of 12 events. This morning, we have our guest, Jane McQueenie. She is the chair of the Kansas City Human Rights Commission. She is an attorney with experience in the public sector, the private sector. She also has worked for the U.S. Department of Education, the Jackson County Prosecutor's Office, the Jackson County Counselor's Office, private Popham firm, and Office of the Special Counsel, Public Defender, and a long history of supporting and working to help women who have discrimination in their workforce cases, and she helps them to work them through, take them to court, and get settlements. So I will get back in the middle of this program and talk about the events of the week, but let's get started with Jane. Jane, welcome to our program, and can you tell us about some significant current changes that you have observed and participated in?
Well, good morning, Alice. It's great to be here. And I want to start by saying that you and Gail James have led a significant effort at the Kansas City level in terms of pay equity. And I think that is one of the biggest issues that face women in the workforce. And while we have the Equal Pay Act, there are still significant issues in terms of the pay disparity. And a lot of that pay disparity arises from the fact that women come into the job force, and even though there are scales, you know, a low and a high for a particular position, women have a lower pay when they start and throughout their careers, so that past pay history often, when they begin a job, starts the process all over again, and we can never quite catch up. And so you and Gail have led a great effort here at the city with some leadership from our city council members to address that particular issue. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Well, I can, and we need to touch on the difference between equal pay and pay equity. That's very significant. And yes, the Finance Committee recommended and the full council supported the implementation of a gender study, which the bid has been out, and they will select a contractor to look at the whole workforce of plus 5,000 employees, and each job category, the men and the women in the category, they're going to be looking at the experience of the women employees and match it up with the men for education, experience, skills, and value. So sometimes women are in the same job and the man next to her is being paid twice as much or significantly more. And that will be looked at. But we also managed to stop the disparity from continuing by not allowing salary history as a factor used in employment. But would you explain the difference between equity and equality?
Well, I think that the Equal Pay Act addresses, it's the federal law that addresses equal pay in the workforce. And it basically says that women and men, for doing the same job, need to be paid the same amount of money. And that sounds very simple and straightforward, except when you get into the job, this is where the analysis sometimes falls short for guaranteeing the pay equity part of the salary differentials between what men and women pay. Current statistics, at least here in Missouri, indicate that women make 78% of what men make, and that is A lot of it is due to the fact that women go in and out of the workforce having children, taking care of elderly parents, and when they do that, that affects their salary rates. And under the Equal Pay Act, one of the defenses to not paying the same amount of money is some type of legitimate non-discriminatory reason, which if a woman's been out of the workforce for significant periods of time, that can affect pay and has been considered a legitimate non-discriminatory reason in the past. So,
well, and also that affects their retirement or pension pay.
Absolutely.
Significantly, because it all multiplies exponentially.
Yes.
So in the end, women are discriminated again and again. Why do women start out at a lower salary? I think you explained it, but how does that have a long-term effect?
I think sometimes they start out at maybe the same rate of pay. Sometimes they don't. But I think after a woman enters the workforce for maybe 5 years or so, she then leaves to take care of children for a significant period of time. So she may be out of the workforce for 2 to 3 years before she goes back, before her children start school again, those kinds of things. And then she's going back to work, maybe doing the same job as her male counterpart, who's not taking that time out, so that he's had 5 years maybe of promotions and pay increases that she hasn't been a part of because she hasn't been in the workforce. So he may be doing the same job as she is, but getting paid significantly more. And you're right, it has a lifetime impact, and the study and the research shows that women have significantly lower retirement funds than men.
And I'm aware that white women, it's whatever the percent, 69, 70 cents per the man dollar. African-American women, it's less than that of white women, and Hispanic women, less than that. And then you get down to Native American, it's like almost 54% of what the male gets. Asian-American women get more than, they have a higher range than white women. Can you talk about the Human Rights Commission and your role as chair and what the function and purpose is?
Sure. I've been on the Kansas City Human Rights Commission. I was appointed by Mayor Funkhauser in 2007. So I started as a commissioner, and when Mayor James became mayor in 2011, I was appointed the chair of the commission, and I've been the commission since. And our job is to look at, try to eradicate all forms of discrimination in Kansas City. And so we have taken some significant steps and are very involved in the LGBTQ community. We support many efforts throughout the community in terms of eliminating and addressing issues of discrimination.
Talk about when somebody thinks they have a case that they want to bring. How do they complain, and what phone numbers do they call? How does it work?
That's a great question, and there are several avenues. The Kansas City Human Rights Commission is one avenue if you have a complaint related to employment discrimination or public access discrimination. You can file a complaint with the Human Relations Department, and they will investigate it. There's also a Missouri State Commission on Human Rights. They investigate complaints of discrimination, employment, housing, and public accommodation. And the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission also investigates complaints of discrimination.
And what are those phone numbers?
The phone numbers I don't have, but if you just put them in the for the Kansas City Human Relations Department, the phone number is 816-513-1836. EEOC and the Missouri Commission, if you Google it, those numbers will come up immediately, and there are different regions for each of those.
And they are in Spanish as well.
Absolutely. And most of the material with the Kansas City Human Rights Commission is in Spanish as well. We've done several public service announcements, and we have those both in English and Spanish. We have investigators that speak Spanish, and as you can imagine, with some of the immigration issues, those are some high areas of concern these days.
And I've heard some of those discussions, but give us some examples of cases that are, I know they're difficult.
They are difficult, and I would say that in preparation for the show today, I looked at some of the statistics on types of charges that the EEOC receives. And the primary charges are related to retaliation. Most complaints of discrimination are related to retaliation. So that shows us that when people speak up about being sexually harassed or discriminated against at work, oftentimes they're retaliated against as well. So that's most of the complaints, followed by race. But sex discrimination is the third highest number of charge complaints with the EEOC on an annual basis. And of those, 60% are related to sexual harassment. So some time frames to keep in mind. You have to file within 180 days of the last act of discrimination. That's true with the Missouri Commission and the EEOC. Difficulties encountered in these types of cases are the length of time it takes. I have lots of clients who've come in. They're very devastated by what's happened to them. They want immediate relief. And our judicial process, our administrative legal process takes time, and anywhere from 2 years to 5 years if there's an appeal. So it can be a long time coming. I looked at the pregnancy discrimination case against UPS this year. It began in 2012 and wasn't decided until 2015. So almost 3 years going through the legal process, if not longer. The other part of the types of things that women are subjected, men are also can file sexual harassment complaints, is an invasion of privacy. I recently worked on a case where it was a sexual harassment by a boss against female workers, and they brought up things that the women had done. They were in their 40s, and they brought up things that they'd done in their 20s, trying to embarrass them in a mediation process, really not related to what had happened to them at work, but it's what happens in the process. So it can be very difficult, very challenging, and oftentimes it's difficult to say that it results in the kind of catharsis that people are looking for, because sometimes it doesn't. But it is the best process, and it does empower women to know that they're doing the right thing by seeking justice for what they've encountered.
Well, two things, and in a moment I want to do a little run-through of the week of events, but be thinking about the best case and the worst case. And also, it's my understanding that oftentimes the person complaining just wants the other person to acknowledge that they have done them wrong.
That is so true. And, you know, I tell people this all the time. They're not going to write you an apology note. Their lawyers are going to tell them, absolutely don't ever say you're sorry, which really it is one of the greatest things that people can do, is say, I'm sorry for what you've gone through. And yet it doesn't happen in our judicial process. At least it doesn't happen to the extent that people would like it. Our system is based on monetary damages mostly, some kind of back pay and reinstatement issues, especially with the EEOC through the administrative process. But very rarely does an employer recognize the wrongdoing that they've committed. Sometimes, but it's a rare case. And I think that's unfortunate.
And if we had the Equal Rights Amendment, would that be different?
I think it would. I think a lot of things in the landscape would change. I think the paradigm for many of the ways we approach just women in the workforce and the power that women have in our country, we make up 51% of the workforce, and yet we're not paid the same. So there are a lot of things that I think with the Equal Rights Amendment could change in that landscape.
And I think half of the public population of our country believe that women have equal rights, and I want to tell you we do not. So let me just do a quick run through. This evening at the Delta Athenaeum, we have Bridging the Gap to Sisterhood, Respect Me Too. And that will be a panel discussion of experiences that women have had and talking to each other. Tuesday, we're going to hear about Kansas and women in leadership positions and difficult challenges that they face in their legislative process. Then in the evening, we have What is Women's Work Worth? The History of the Equal Pay Act, which will be at the National Archives, and RSVPs are encouraged. Wednesday, Saving Our Democracy, It's Our Job. That will be a discussion about voter suppression. I think it's oppression. Often it affects women, minorities, and people who don't have all the IDs, et cetera, and the challenges in Missouri and Kansas are really significant. The right to vote that we women won 98 years ago does not ensure we get the vote. And so in the evening, Barriers and Bias to the Women in the Workplace and Civil Society, we have Judge Lisa Harwick moderating a panel of women whose names I will read: Lynn Bratcher, an attorney in work employment law and very successful lawyer. And then we have the PhD Provost and Executive Vice Chancellor Barbara Bickelmeyer from UMKC, and Sister Michelle Morick, who is at the National Catholic Reporter, has worked at the UN with women across the world. Then on Thursday, we're going to talk about women, domestic violence, sexual assault, and their experience when they have an incident that makes them unsafe in their rental apartment, and successes, again, that have been achieved at the city council level thanks to persistence of Kate Heinen and MOXA and domestic violence agencies across the city. They need to be able to get out of their unsafe housing. And this protects them, and it requires the landlord to allow them to break the lease for reasons of safety and protection. Then voter suppression of women, that will be our own Heartland Labor Forum. Judy Ansel and her staff, Shekelin Hams, will be interviewing the president of the National Organization of Women. And then that evening, we'll have a screening of the actual life and story of Jessica Gonzalez. That's a case that went all the way to the Supreme Court around violence and protection with a court order in Colorado. That case went to the Supreme Court, and to my amazement, to the above the Supreme Court, to the Inter-American Commission, and they settled in her favor. Thank God for international legal entities. That will be at the Plaza Library, 6:30 p.m. Be sure to register online. And that we will have Jessica Gonzalez here in person with the film producers, so you'll get a chance to meet her. That will be an exceptionally wonderful opportunity to really understand why we need the Equal Rights Amendment. Then Friday, Honoring Women's Leadership, and that program will be at the Kent City, Kansas Community College with the AAUW chapter, and talking with the former president of the college and the leadership that she has shown. Then we have a networking event at the Tavoy on Friday evening, socializing, and a chance to hear from a couple of people who have done successful things, like our Mayor Pro Tem, Scott Wagner. Jolie Justice won't be able to be there, but there will be the City Councilman Ron Nelson from Prairie Village. They're doing some very significant efforts to also eliminate discrimination against women. And then Saturday we'll have the filming of Anne Braden, the Southern Patriot. And she will be, her film, her story, her history will be at the Tivoli Theater at noon. Again, RSVP, go online to our Facebook, and you can see the details. That starts at 12, and you will get to hear and see the story of a woman who, although white woman, she was a mediator and was able to desegregate her little community in Louisville, where she faced extreme opposition, to provide and lead the way with desegregation. And then on Sunday, women pastors of different faith traditions will be speaking out on behalf of women. So now we go back to Jane. Tell us more about some legal cases that you've had on behalf of women.
Well, I've represented a lot of cases. I want to mention we've talked a little bit about Title VII. Title IX is a great law that protects women in the educational forefront, and I did do that work for several years at the University of Kansas. So I want to mention that there's some protection for students out there as well, in addition to Title VII. I want to say that I think this year's theme is really important, because after I've practiced law for over 30 years now, I hate to admit that, but there are still significant things that need to be done. And I like the movie on Thursday night because it really resonates with the issue that you have to speak up, and one person can make significant changes. And so over the course of my career, I'd say that's the thing that I really think is important, is that people need to speak up. They need to come forward, especially women need to talk to each other, be in strength, realize strength in speaking up. I think that's really important.
What about Employment Law 360? What's that about?
That is an issue. I wanted to say this morning, I get a news alert every morning about issues that are happening in employment through this Employment 360. And there are six headlines, and three of them today were related to sex discrimination. One, an ex-clerk says a New York judge sexually harassed her for several years. Another one talked about moving forward in the EEOC complaint process. And the third was about pregnancy discrimination. And so it's at the forefront of all of the legal issues that are happening today.
What about the Missouri Commission on Human Rights and their unfortunate how they were forced by the legislature to implement a law that we all, or so many of us, really find awful?
Senate Bill 53 was passed in August of last year, and it has been a significant blow for the plaintiffs' lawyers and the victims of sexual harassment, in that it has limited the amount of damages. It's also changed the burden of proof, that the plaintiff now has to prove that the motivating factor in the discriminatory treatment was what resulted in her firing, her discharge, the hostile environment. So oftentimes employers know that if they can demonstrate something in terms of performance, that they can argue that there was something other than discrimination that caused the termination or the treatment at work. And so it's been a real shift in the burden of proof and how cases are going to be treated. We didn't have a limitation on damages under the Missouri Commission prior to this, and so most cases were filed in state court. You had a jury trial. While you still have a jury trial, the damages are going to be limited now up to $500,000, depending on the size of the employer, starting between 1 to 50 is, or 50 employees max is $50,000 damages. So it depends on how many employees at the corporation or the business that discriminated. It's going to determine the amount of damages you have. So there's sort of a disconnect between what happens to you now being related solely in terms of damages to how many employers or how many employees the employer has. So there's some real disparity there.
If you're listening and you want to get more information, then you can go online, womensequalitygkc@gmail.com, and you can go on Facebook, and that would be facebook.com/womensequalitygkc/. Tell us a little bit about, if you're LGBTQ or African American and you are fired for reasons you suspect are racial or discriminatory.
Well, and that's a great question. I think that under Title VII, we haven't fully recognized sexual orientation as protected class, as a protected issue. However, Kansas City, Missouri has always, and for, not always, but for a long time, recognized sexual orientation as a prohibited discriminatory practice. So you can file a complaint with the Kansas City Human Rights Department, and they will investigate that. Going back to your question, so recently with some of the changes in the Supreme Court, there's been a split in the circuits about whether or not sexual orientation was protected. Now I'm think most lawyers that represent people that have been discriminated against thinking that that won't go up to the Supreme Court this term at least. So that's probably going to be, that's going to remain an unsettled area of the law for the next probably few years. But that's a great area. People need to come forward and complain about issues like that so that we can try to make some changes in the law.
Jane, given all your experiences through the years in both Missouri and in Kansas at the state, county, federal level, and working in private practice, what do women need to know to protect their rights and their families?
Well, I think it is knowledge. I think they do need to know what to do, and they need to talk to people in the community about what's going on and see if they can't get some relief by speaking to lawyers.
And where's the best way to find an attorney that knows about this area of the law?
I think that MATA is the Missouri Association of Trial Lawyers, and they have trial attorneys. They have many attorneys that practice in this area. You can call me. I can give you referrals. You can talk to people at the Kansas City Human Rights Commission or Department, or you can call the Missouri Commission or EEOC. They can also provide some guidance.
Thank you, Jane. My guest has been Jane McQueenie, and she is here with us in the studio, and we're on Jaws of Justice Radio. I'm Alice Kitchen, co-chair of the Women's Equality Coalition. Thank you, Jane, for being with
us. Thank you, Alice, and really, we do need to push back.
Now the calendar for the week of August 20. Survivors Unite is uniting surviving families who have lost a loved one to violent crime. Their next meeting will be Monday, August 20, 7 p.m. at Margaret's Place, 7217 Troost, Kansas City, Missouri. They understand that grief is experienced in different stages and help families heal and learn to properly release their emotions through sharing and conversation. The monthly meeting of the Kansas City, Missouri Chapter of Citizens United for the Reform of Errants, or CURE, will be held Monday, 6:30 p.m. at the Chestnut Avenue Family Resource Center, 3811 Chestnut, Kansas City, Missouri. Missouri CURE advocates for the human rights of prisoners in Missouri prisons and jails, as well as those who have returned to society. They lobby state and local government, make direct contact with corrections officials, and issue a quarterly newsletter sent to supporters and prisoners. The second annual felon-friendly job fair, hosted by State Representative Brandon Allington, will be held Thursday, August 23rd, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Robert J. Mohart Multipurpose Center, 3200 Wayne, Kansas City, Missouri. For more information, contact them at 573-751-3129 or email brandon.ellington@house.mo.gov. My name is Teresa Wilkie, reminding you that these events and more can be found on the Jaws of Justice Radio Facebook page, as well as the Jaws of Justice Radio page on the KKFI website, kkfi.org. We want to thank our engineer today, Keith Washburn. Up next is Latara Smith and her guest.
Well, hello, it's Latara Smith. Thank you and welcome to KKFI 90.1 FM. This morning I have the wonderful opportunity and I am blessed to introduce to you all and make you guys aware of a wonderful local nonprofit that we have here in Kansas City, Missouri. We have Mr. Doug Keene with us this morning. Doug, thank you for coming on.
Thank you for letting me come on.
Awesome. Mr. Keene is actually with a wonderful nonprofit by the name of Sleepyhead Beds. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, awesome. Doug, tell us a little bit about your organization and what it is that you guys do.
Well, Sleepyhead Beds, since 2010, collects beds from the community. We sterilize them, and then we provide them to children who are sleeping on the floor and their immediate family.
Okay. And so tell us a little bit more about it. How did your organization come about?
A lady by the name of Monica Starr was a CASA representative in Johnson County.
Okay.
And she found out that children could not go home without a bed in the home.
Okay, so children that were like being returned to their families.
That's correct.
Okay,
in
awesome.
The court system, domestic abuse shelters,
whatever
the case may be, that they could not get out. And being a CASA advocate, she was starting to see more and more. So she actually bought a new bed, sterilized her old one, and donated it. Well, her neighbors saw what was happening, and so they started donating their beds that they were no longer in need of.
Wow.
And it just grew. And so it's actually grown to where this year we'll hand out about 3,000 mattresses and then the associated box springs. So,
and that is absolutely true because, of course, working with women in reentry, as I've done for several years, we would have women who would come out of prison. And they would, have to reunite with their children. And if their children were actually placed in child protective custodies while they went to serve their time in prison, then what ended up happening is they had to, once they got out, they had to regroup. They had to get a home. They had to have everything that they needed in that home ready and set up before child protective services would return the kids to the parent. So, yes, and that's one thing that we used to run into. One obstacle was always, I need beds for my children as well as beds for the adults. So tell us, do you guys serve both adults and children with your program?
If what we serve are children first, and then if the adult that has the children in the home, so it could be a parent, a grandparent, an aunt, an uncle, a guardian, we'll provide them a bed also. So in your case, if somebody's coming out of prison or out of jail and they're trying to get their kids back, they probably don't have a bed either.
Right,
so
exactly.
We will give them a bed as well as their children. But there need to be children in the home for us to give them beds.
Okay. Now, just real quick for the people, let's give them your contact information because we're going to do it now. We're going to do it towards the end because I want people to get your information. How would they contact you?
You can call us by phone at 816-547-9965. Or you can email me at doug@sleepyheadbeds.org.
Okay, awesome.
And those are the two easiest ways to reach us. Now, if you go to our website, you can register for a bed on our website. And if you're working with a advocate, we'll call it social worker, caseworker, school counselor, somebody like that. If they register you, the process goes a little bit faster. So we recommend that everybody work through an advocate just to provide other service to them also.
Okay. And can you provide your website?
Yes. It's www.sleepyheadbeds.org.
Awesome. Awesome. You know, when we think about that, that's the situation, and I was just kind of reading some of your literature here, and it is very important for children to have beds. I'm sure that it helps them in, to function better well in school. And, have you guys, what are some of the testimonies that you've received from your families that you've helped?
We also work with Children's Mercy Hospital, and one of our board members, Dr. Kevin Smith, helps promote the safe sleep and the good sleep. And it affects obesity. It affects schoolwork.
Yes.
It affects overall self-worth. There's all of those. But additionally, safe sleep is sleeping in a bed. And so even from a small child, they need to be sleeping appropriately. So we do provide pack and plays. We do have toddler beds. We don't have the actual crib furniture, but we have the toddler bed. And it's important to have children sleeping on their back on a firm mattress, and just to provide the safe sleep. And so we know that if a child's sleeping in a chair or sleeping on a sofa or sleeping on the floor in a sleeping bag, they're not getting all of that basic need before they even go to school to try and learn something. And so that's what we're trying to overcome, is to make sure that each child has a place that allows them to get that good night's sleep.
Okay. And also, I want the people to know, too, because I know that I focused on the women or men that are coming out of prison, because sometimes men come out and have to gain custody of their children as well. But I also want to let people know that it's just not for people that are coming out of prison. It's for children of victims of domestic violence, children with disabled parents, you know, children whose maybe families are, you know, unfortunately are dealing with poverty.
That's correct.
Correct?
Yes. So we get a fair number of referrals from school counselors that are seeing it. So those families aren't necessarily in another service.
Right.
But their child's still sleeping on the floor. So
right.
That probably fits a tight more to the poverty side. But yes, we don't really ask why.
Mm-hmm.
If you tell us you need a bed, we're going to help you get a bed for your child.
Right. And would you say that bedless children endure a lack of safety, comfort, say privacy, and reassuring routines?
Sure, absolutely. Because they're probably staying in a room with other adults or older children or things mm-hmm. like that. And so they just don't feel comfortable sleeping. And so mm-hmm. they're out of their what would be a normal element that everybody else has, where
right.
they have a bed and a room and a sheet and a blanket, something like that.
Now, how long has the organization existed?
Since 2010.
2010. And how many families have you all served, roughly?
Roughly, since 2010, we're probably in the 3,500 range of families.
Wow.
Probably close to 12,000 children.
Wow.
We're up over 12,000 beds as of the end of this year. So we're really ramping up. We're hoping to get to 4,000 beds next year. So we'll be really putting a push to get beds from the community that we can sterilize and turn back. The other side of this is families that are waiting.
Yes, that was going to be my next question. Is there a wait list so people can know what to expect?
And so our total wait list from families that are working with an advocate or have referred themselves to our website
uh-huh.
is about 974 families. And it accounts for about 2,014 children.
Wow.
Now, that wait list, of course, the effect is just like, you know, if somebody's coming out of a facility, they may not know exactly what day they're coming out.
Exactly.
But they will get signed up on our website so that they get the emails about when we're handing out beds.
Right.
And so they won't all, hopefully, uh-huh. they won't all come on our next distribution day. That would be very crowded.
Okay.
But it seems to be it works out real good. We serve about 60 to 75 families on our distribution days, which are once a month.
Okay. Now, do you all serve both Kansas and Missouri?
We do.
Okay.
We service from a bed collection standpoint, we collect beds from about a 30-mile radius from
okay.
our warehouse at 5604 Troost. But from a service, we have families come as far as St. Joe, Lawrence,
okay,
south down towards Lacine, out towards Oak Grove. So we have families come from a fairly large area.
Okay. Now, do you guys deliver the beds to the families, or do the families pick them up?
The families come and pick them up themselves.
Okay.
So it depends on the number of beds. They may have a truck or a trailer. They rent a U-Haul, something like that. But at this time, everybody comes to our warehouse to pick up the beds.
Okay. Are there certain days and hours that you guys distribute the beds?
They are. Basically, during the week, we set appointments. So most of those appointments are in the morning. And so a person that signed up on our website with an advocate, they would be able to come at one of those appointment times. They would set an appointment. And then the general public and anybody that can't make that appointment come on a Saturday morning once a month.
Okay. Now, we're sitting here and we're talking about all the wonderful things that you guys do to help the people in the community. What is it that your organization may need help with? I know at one time we spoke about the issue of you guys provide the mattresses and the box springs, but there was still a need for rails. Remember, we had that conversation previously. And I think at that point, someone was kind of looking at you guys to see if they were going to come on and help with that. Did that ever pan out for you guys?
Not quite yet.
Okay.
quite yet. We're still looking for a sponsor that would help us purchase rails so that the box springs could sit up off the floor. That's very important also.
Yes.
Then we're always in need of bedding. We typically only get bedding donated to us to account for about 25 to 30% of the mattresses we hand out.
Okay.
So any company that would want to join on and do a bedding drive, or a school would want to do a bedding drive, or a church would want to do a bedding drive, please have them contact me at doug@sleepyheadbeds.org.
Awesome. So anyone out there, you just heard Mr. Keene say, with the wonderful work they're doing, providing beds to those in need in the community, we could most definitely use a sponsor that would want to come in and give us some bed rails to help them out, right?
That's correct.
That would be fantastic. Awesome. So if there's anyone out there that would like to do that, please make sure and contact Sleepyhead Beds, and let's make that happen. It's very important that we as a community come together, work together to meet the needs of our community. It's very, very important that we do that. So, well, let me ask you something. What size beds, you know, because that's going to be a question people are going to have. What different size beds do you guys offer?
We offer pack and plays. We offer toddler beds. We offer twin. We have some twin extra long beds.
So when you say toddler beds, are you actually talking about
like
the little toddler bed frame?
Yeah.
Okay, with the infant mattress that goes inside.
We just have the mattress for
toddlers. The
toddler.
Mattress for toddlers. Okay, great. Awesome.
And then we have twin extra long, we have full, we have some full extra long, and then we have queen.
Okay.
I do not have king size mattresses at all. They're just too big.
Right. They really are. Sometimes you gotta have a really big bedroom for that. But now let me ask you a question, because this did come to me when I told someone I was going to interview you today. So what about elderly people? What about elderly people that maybe have like the hospital type beds?
We don't get, nor do we accept hospital beds.
Those type of mattresses that are flexible or that comes up or whatever?
Yeah, we do not have those. And we also don't accept sleep number beds or mechanical beds donated to us.
Okay.
They're just too difficult to handle.
Okay.
We do pick up beds from the community. We ask for a small donation to do that. But you can go to our website, sleepyheadbeds.org. And sign up to have your mattress picked up by us. So if you're getting a new mattress, or you're moving, or you work for a real estate company and your clients don't want to move their mattresses, please have them register on our website and we'll come get those.
Okay. Now, I know that you guys have some supporters, so we want to take this time to give a shout out to those supporters that you do have.
That's correct. We are supported by NASB, North American Savings Bank, the Automotive Dealers Association of Kansas City, Hallmark Cards. We also are sponsored by Hallmark and several foundations from around the Kansas City area. And we appreciate all that support that is provided to us. And we do have a fundraising event coming up with lots of supporters there. It's November 7th, and it's called Bingo and Boulevard for Beds.
Awesome.
And you can find that on Eventbrite currently.
Okay. And will there be updated information on your website? Because November's kind of far down.
It is, and you can also find that information on our website.
Okay. Well, you know what? It's really awesome what you all do, and I believe this interview will, because I didn't know you guys existed till we met each other that day in that wonderful restaurant we were
That's
in.
That's right.
And I was like, what, Sleepyhead Beds, when I saw your shirt? And I was just so impressed with what you guys do. And that's why I said, you know what? I've got to get you on the radio. We've got to tell people, you know, that you guys exist, because I actually had never heard of you. And I work out here in the community. So, you know, it goes to show you, we don't know about every resource that's out there. But it is very important that when we find out about them, that we're willing to share the information and put it out. Because after it's all said, over and done with, it's about the community. Amen?
That's correct. And some people laugh a little bit, but I do tell pretty much everybody within 3 feet of me what I do.
Right.
So it's no wonder you found out about me at a restaurant.
Yeah, we were standing there and I just, sleepyhead beds, what's that?
Yes, and so we definitely appreciate the opportunity to get out in front of more people in the public and touch more people. So we're very grateful for this opportunity to be on your show.
Oh, we're great. We're just as grateful and blessed to have you. And like I said, blessed to know about your services because, I mean, to serve as many people as you've had, that's making a major difference in the community.
Absolutely.
You know, and that's what it's about. Most definitely that's what it's about. Because like your statement says here, every child deserves to have a bed, you know.
That's true.
Every child does.
The little bit of a side part of what we do, which mm-hmm. we get support from the MARC Solid Waste Disposal, because we are keeping mattresses and box springs out of the landfill.
Oh, okay.
So we've saved about 600 tons of mattress and box springs from the landfill. Mm-hmm. Now, we get some we can't use, and we do recycle those. So those don't even go to the landfill.
Okay.
We work with a company called Avenue of Life. And so the other side is the landfill saving. So mm-hmm. we give people an opportunity not to landfill their mattress that they no longer want.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so with that, so when you guys get the beds, even though they're used beds, what type of system do you take them through? Because I know people are going to want to know that as
That's correct. We have a product that's FDA approved. It's called Sterifab, and we spray it on with wearing a mask and gloves and goggles with a sprayer, and we soak the mattresses, and it kills everything. We have not had a bug problem or okay. a stain problem or a smell problem. If it looks bad or we see anything, we don't even allow it in our warehouse.
Okay.
We take it right to recycling.
Wow. Well, I'll tell you what, we're going to wrap up here shortly, but I want you one more time, everyone, I want you guys to hear his contact information. I want you to give your email address. I want you to give your contact number and so that the people will be able to contact you.
Fantastic. Again, it's Sleepyhead Beds. The phone number is 816-547-9965. My email address is doug@sleepyheadbeds.org. And the website is www.sleepyheadbeds.org.
Awesome. Now, I just had a question come in. It says, do you supply beds to kids that are sharing beds with siblings? That's a good
yes.
question. Okay. So that would be...
We want, if there's room in the home,
okay.
we would like every child to get a bed, even if they're sharing with a sibling.
Okay.
That's correct. We understand that maybe it was fun when they were five.
Yeah, when
now they're
smart.
Six, it's
We've
not funny.
We've all done that before. Yeah. I've put my kids yeah. in the same bed before.
Yeah, but now that they're six, it's not any fun anymore. So,
right, because they're getting older
right.
and
so,
they need more space.
Yes, we can provide that bed also. They can
okay,
just register
awesome.
On our website.
Now, are there any income qualifications? You know, is there an income, you know, because some people, you know, places have income limits. Is there an income limit?
Not to us.
Okay.
So if you refer yourself or if you refer through an advocate, the income is not part of the problem. It's that you, for whatever reason, mm-hmm. cannot provide a bed for your child, or you don't have a bed, but you have a child that has a bed. So we want everybody to be getting a good night's sleep.
Well,
you're
I'm
better
excited.
Parent if you sleep on a bed.
Well,
so.
I'm excited. I want a bed, doggone it. I want a bed. I'm excited. I'm glad that you guys are providing these services, and I really want to thank you for coming on the show today. I know we met
Absolutely.
That day, and you know, I'm about getting the word out to the community because I'm for the community. So I
Absolutely.
Really, really thank you coming on today, and I wish you guys the best. I wish you guys the best with your upcoming fundraiser.
Absolutely.
And, you know, make sure and remind us here at KKFI so maybe we can, you know, put some information out for you guys.
We'll do that.
Most definitely so. Okay. Let me see. Oh, okay. And also, you can go to our website, and we have Sleepyhead Beds contact information on our website. So I want to thank everyone for tuning in today. Doug, one more time, I want to thank you for coming in. It's been a blessing meeting you, a blessing interviewing you, and it's most definitely a blessing knowing about the services that your nonprofit organization does for our community. Thank you so much for your service. Everyone, have a blessed day.
It's the 420 Drug War News. This is kind of a two-parter. We're going to hear from Dr. Jeffrey Guy, and we'll get a response, if you will, from Irv Rosenfeld, one of the two surviving medical marijuana patients supplied by the U.S. government. Dr. Jeffrey Guy is the chairman of the board and founder of GW Pharmaceuticals, based in the UK. They have a new product, Epidiolex, coming forward for approval within the United States. This is a cannabis-based product. Should be available by the end of 2018. Early estimates that it will cost the patients approximately $32,000 a year to fill their prescription.
Well, I'm Dr. Jeffrey Guy. I'm a pharmaceutical physician. That means I've spent about 23 years in clinical research in the pharmaceutical industry, developing drugs. And I founded GW Pharmaceuticals right at the end of 1997 and early 1998. I founded the company really in response to a debate that was beginning to become more pressing in the UK during 1997. And that was namely that a number of patients were finding themselves in front of judges in court, having used cannabis, marijuana, for certain debilitating conditions, mainly multiple sclerosis, spinal cord injury, and other neurological conditions. But the courts were taking pity on them and letting them off. And this presented a quandary to the British government and certainly the civil servants at the Home Office, because the law was being brought into disrepute. And therefore a solution was sought to find a way in which the patients could be treated, but with a legal prescription pharmaceutical. And I led that program and developed the plan, which was then accepted by the UK authorities and the UK government.
I understand that you have developed a couple of products under the brand name Sativex.
Well, Sativex is one particular product, and that is a cannabis-based extract, which is made from the extract of two cannabis plants. The plants have been bred specifically to exhibit one or other of the major cannabinoids in abundance. So one plant exhibits very high levels of THC, and the other plant exhibits very high levels of CBD, which is cannabidiol. And we make pharmaceutical-grade extracts from each of these plants, and then we blend them in certain ratios.
Okay, that's it for Dr. Jeffrey Guy. Following is part of an interview I conducted with Mr. Irv Rosenfeld. He's one of two people left alive who are supplied by the U.S. federal government. He's going to talk about the situation with GW Pharmaceuticals bringing forward their cannabinoid medicine right here in the United States.
Well, what GW is trying to do, okay, is once that the government schedules Epidiolex, which will probably be Schedule 3, GW is going to try to say that they now have a drug for a CBD product. And they're going to say that everybody else is infringing upon their prescription. And they're going to try to stop everybody in the country from selling CBD. That's what they're going to try to do. Therefore, they have a right to, you know, use a prescription for, you know, two decades or whatever, and anybody else is infringing upon their prescription.
We had you on a couple of weeks back, and we were talking about progress,
right,
you know, around the country. The Oklahoma's coming around, I think. They're, at least
they are
medical. The governor or some board is trying to limit it to no smoking and no home growing, and you know,
that's what they're trying to do in Florida. You know, no flower and no homegrown unless we get this ballot initiative in 2020. Yes, same thing.
And I even hear rumors here in Texas. We just had a seminar last weekend that the thought going around there is that there may be progress here in Texas next year, but it would once again limit it to no smoking and no homegrown. That means that the big boys, the dollar makers, are going to be in charge.
Exactly.
That the little guy is going to be behind the eight ball once again.
Exactly, which is wrong.
Well, what is your thought? I mean, I've seen this over the last 20 years kind of unfolding, and we were all so focused on the fact that progress was being made, we weren't watching what was happening behind the scenes where the big money guys are really in charge of regulations and how we move forward. Your thought there?
My thoughts are the sad part is it comes down to patients. And patients are going to suffer. You know, if you want the history of the medical marijuana movement in this country, you know, get my book, which is MyMedicineTheBook.com.
And I am Dean at DrugTruth.net.
1, 2, 3.
We hope you enjoyed today's show and that we leave you with something to think about, something to talk to your neighbors about, and a reason to get involved. As always, the opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests of Jaws of Justice Radio, not of KKFI, the Midcoast Radio Project Incorporated, its staff, or volunteers. You can find our calendar of events and a link to our show on the Jaws of Justice Radio Facebook page. You can always listen to us live and find our podcasts on the KKFI website, kkfi.org. If you have a show idea or want to help produce the show, email us at jawsofjusticeradio@yahoo.com. This is Jamie reminding you our outro music is Better Man from the Playing for Change CD. Please tune in for the rest of our 9 a.m. weekday lineup with Law and Disorder on Tuesday, Alternative Radio on Wednesday, Cowtown Conversations on Thursday, and Between the Lines at 9 a.m., followed by Bioneers at 9:30 a.m. on Fridays. Up next is Monday Morning Medicine Show with Dr. Mike, and at noon, Arts Magazine with Michael Hoag. Stick around for Jazz and Blues in the afternoon and Eco Radio KC at 6 p.m. Then round out your day south of the border with Fiesta Musical, Compartiendo Familia, and Compartiendo en Noche.